DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We are absolutely fired out of a cannon today, getting ready for the cocktail party on Saturday. It's going to be an awesome show. Over the course of the next few minutes, too, I'm going to be telling you a lot more about what's going to be going on for us this week. You know around here, that Gatorator countdown is a big deal to us. And as we count that thing down, we're going to be doing a lot of very special events here this week. So I'm going to be talking to you a bunch about that on today's program. We'll, of course, also welcome in Jeff Sintel to the show a little bit later on as well. But speaking of the Gatorator countdown, let me remind you that we are now just 4 days away from Georgia, Florida on Saturday in Jacksonville. Another chance for Georgia to write a great chapter in this rivalry, and I cannot wait for that. And boy, one of the things that helps you have a good time with all of this and get ready for this game coming up on Saturday is the fact that Florida seemingly cannot help itself from being Florida. It is true to form and true to brand every single day. If you're not in the media, you don't really care much about this, but it's an important backstory to explain what we're going to start the show with today. That the various sports information departments, they're essentially the publicists for the programs, they produce notes, game notes, stats, funny anecdotes, things like that, to help prepare the media for the game that's about to take place. And Florida, in its game notes this week, mentions former Georgia defensive coordinator Todd Grantham. And apparently, the folks there in Gainesville may be just a little bit triggered by Georgia fans, what's the right word here? Disrespect for Grantham. The fact of the matter is Georgia fans don't view Todd Grantham as a very good defensive coordinator. He is the defensive coordinator at Florida now. And maybe Florida's a little bothered by this, a little concerned that Georgia fans have a disregard for Grantham. You'll remember the whole notion of third and Grantham being a line in the past of, you know, Georgia's defense is under Grantham, seemingly having a propensity for giving up big plays on third down. Most Georgia fans, I would dare say almost all Georgia fans, were glad when Grantham departed the program. Jeremy Pruitt came in his place. I think the Georgia defense got better with Pruitt in comparison to Grantham, but Florida fans and the Florida program seemingly very happy to have Todd Grantham right now. So much so that in the media notes this week, produced and published by Florida, there was a little bit of a nod towards the Georgia fans joking and chuckling at the expense of Todd Grantham. If you're watching on video, I'll show this to you. If you're listening, I'll read this to you so you can hear it. The whole idea of a third and Grantham. Well, what Florida writes here is third and Grantham with a vengeance. Now, I'm going to read this. It says, while Georgia fans may have used third and Grantham as a shot at defensive coordinator Todd Grantham during his time in Athens, it's turned into a positive hashtag at Louisville, Mississippi State, and Florida. And Florida goes on to say that the last three opponents are just 9 of 41 for a 21.95% on third down. The Gators have climbed from 103rd to 40th nationally following those three games in terms of the overall third down defense. So Florida's saying there, don't make fun of our defensive coordinator. We like our defensive coordinator. We think he's going to be good. And those third and Grantham hashtags don't work around here. I guess my question would be is, why are you so bothered by this? Why don't you just let Grantham's performance speak for itself? I mean, after all, Georgia fans saw Georgia play against Grantham a year ago at Mississippi, for Mississippi State in Athens, and it was total domination. Georgia played against Todd Grantham's Louisville defense going back to, 2014 in the bowl game there. Total domination there as well. I can promise you this, that from the standpoint of most Georgia fans, they are licking their chops at the opportunity to face a Todd Grantham defense once again. And if Florida thinks it's going to be great shakes with Grantham this upcoming Saturday, then by all means, let's let the game play out and let's see where the chips fall at that time there. It's kind of a weird way for Florida to go about this before it all starts. Now, for what it's worth, Kirby Smart did speak about Todd Grantham during his weekly press conference this week, and he acknowledged that, yes, so far the stats for Florida defensively have been pretty good, and I guess you'll take some, you'll give some credit to Grantham for that, saying that, you know, some of what we saw last year from Grantham Mississippi State is still what you're seeing right now, although there are some differences as well. Here's Kirby Smart talking about Todd Grantham.
Some similarities, some differences. I think, you know, they were a little bigger last year at Mississippi State in some spots, extremely athletic. You know, they did a good job at Mississippi State last year, and he's doing a good job this year at Florida. They're very aggressive, doing a good job of causing turnovers, got all kinds of fumble recoveries and all kinds of strips. So there's some similarities between the two, but they're not completely the same. And I think any time as a defense coordinator, you've got things you believe in, and when you've been good at being a defense coordinator in this conference, you do what you believe in. And he's got some of the same things he's done at Mississippi State.
And listen, there is no doubt that one of the things that Florida has done a lot this season is generated a bunch of takeaways here. But as you've probably heard me say before, this is the kind of thing over the course of a long season that has a way of not really duplicating itself in the second half of the season the way that it did in the first half of the season. That's not a very predictive stat. It can be in a stat that explains things pretty well. You look at Florida's record, it's pretty good. They're ranked in the top 10. Oh, a huge number of takeaways go a long way towards explaining why Florida's won some of the games that it's won, including the big interception against Joe Burrow late in the game against LSU a couple of weeks ago. But when you compare first halves of the season to second halves of the season in terms of the overall total number of takeaways, that has a way of not being very consistent for the course of a full year. We'll see how that plays itself out on Saturday against Georgia. But as far as the whole overall idea of third and Grantham and will Florida's third down defense generate a bunch of pass plays, a bunch of yards, the way that a lot of times at Georgia the same thing seemed to happen from time to time, if you listen to Kirby Smart here, it sounds like he doesn't want to find that out. That's a theory that he doesn't want to test at all, because if he had his way, George, which admittedly this season has not been particularly good on third and long situations, he thinks the best overall plan is just to avoid those scenarios all the way around. Here's more from Kirby about how his offense will attack defenses on third down.
Well, you don't want to be in third and long. First of all, last time I checked, nobody wins third and long at a high rate. If they do, then they're special. So the big deal for us is being able to make good decisions, put the quarterback in a good situation. You know, sometimes the best play on third and long is an 8-yard gain that allows 8 yards for the punter. So those are things that we continue to work on, try to develop at. But it's like third and one and fourth and one. I mean, if you're in those on defense, you're not going to have a real good third down rate. And if you're in third and long a lot, it's not like there's a scheme that says this is a great third and long play. There's not great plays for third and long. There's wins and losses on third and long. That sometimes a win may not be a conversion, but it can be not a sack or not a fumble or something like that. But we continue to work on that, and we've got explosive players on offense that we got to try to find ways to get the ball and let them break some tackles.
I mean, listen, that last phrase right there is one that I've heard so many Georgia fans talking so much about here over the course of the last week and a half, going back to the last game that Georgia played against LSU. Playmakers, getting them the ball, allowing them to miss, you know, make tacklers miss, allowing the chains to get moved here. That is something that Georgia fans definitely want to see against Todd Grantham's defense and every other defense that Georgia's going to play for the rest of the season. Because as much as I joke about the third and Grantham stuff, and as much as I legitimately believe that Todd Grantham is not an elite defensive coordinator, certainly not in the same category of a Dave Aranda that Georgia saw a couple of weeks ago and some of the other defensive coordinators in the SEC. I think I've said before, you know, Grantham can be Bush League with some of his sideline antics. I thought it was embarrassing for Florida what happened in the Vanderbilt game a couple of weeks ago, for instance. As much as I'll say things like that, the truth is I don't think you can deny that Florida this season has been a more physical team than it was a year ago. To that, I will give Grantham some credit. To that, Florida has created a level of physicality that I don't believe they had a year ago. When you talk about Georgia in this game on Saturday, even if it avoids the third and longs with the Kirby Smart just described, there is still going to be a battle at the line of scrimmage to get Elijah Holyfield more involved, to find a way to pass protect long enough to get the Terry Godwins and the McCole Hardmans and the Riley Ridleys, maybe Demetrius Robertson, who almost got a catch two Saturdays ago. There's going to be a battle to get those guys more involved here. So Grantham will still play a role, even if he's not quite as good a defensive coordinator, I think, as some Florida fans hope and think that he might be. He has created a physical brand of defense there at Florida, and it's going to be Georgia's job to battle that. And Kirby Smart, for the most part, is right. Avoiding third and long, staying in, you know, third and manageable situations is going to go a long way towards determining how this game ultimately plays out. But the overall bottom line here is that Georgia fans are pretty confident that Todd Grantham's the kind of defensive coordinator that's yielded yards and points to Georgia before, and they think this Saturday that may happen again. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Good to have you with us. No matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, with the Dog Nation Twitter feed, on the radio at noon. We love being with our friends in the Classic City every day on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form, wherever podcasts can be found, Apple Podcasts, for instance, or the world-famous DogNation.com. We are really glad you have found our program here today and really appreciate Marco's Pizza for making it all possible. By now, you know the story of Marco's pretty well. Authentic Italian-quality pizza at an unbelievably great low price, an everyday value, not the kind of coupon you have to clip or promo code you have to remember, just a simple everyday price. How about this? Two medium, two-topping pizzas for $6.99 each. Go to Marcos.com. You can find the Marcos closest to you, and you can take advantage of this great offer. Later on, it is Jeff Sintel, and as promised, and I mentioned this at the end of the show yesterday, one of the things we're going to do a lot with Jeff today is get into what he had to say about and what Jaden Hazelwood, the five-star wide receiver, had to say to him. A really provocative interview with Hazelwood that Jeff posted on Saturday to DogNation.com after having spent some time with Hazelwood on Friday night on the heels of a very good Cedar Grove Pace Academy football game. Great stuff from Jeff with Hazelwood. It's very provocative. Not everybody will agree with every single thing Hazelwood had to say, but you can't deny that he was really outspoken. So a lot of our conversation with Jeff is going to center around what he had to say in terms of his interview with Jaden Hazelwood. That's really good stuff coming up in a couple of minutes. Before we get to that, though, let's go around the doghouse here. Brought to you today by Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa in beautiful Towns County, Georgia, on the banks of Lake Chattoog. And as we go around the doghouse here, let me remind you of what happened on yesterday's program when I played some audio from the Paul Feinbaum show from Friday of the former Florida great at quarterback, the Heisman Trophy winner, Tim Tebow, in his role now as an analyst for the SEC Network. He's on the Feinbaum show, and he made one of the strongest accusations an analyst can make against a team, whether it be a former rival or not. One of the most one of the boldest statements an analyst can make is to say this team quit on its coach, quit on the field, didn't give full effort, didn't want it as much as the opponent. But that's kind of what Tebow said when it comes to Georgia's effort against LSU. Take a listen as a reminder of what Tim Tebow said, then we'll hear Kirby Smart's response to that. Here's Tebow first to set things up.
It was the first time I've ever seen, under Kirby Smart, a team out-hustle and out-effort Georgia, and I don't think it was close. LSU showed up with a chip on their shoulder, and they didn't just outplay them. They out-hustled them, and Georgia stopped, and they quit on certain plays, and LSU didn't. If I'm a Georgia fan, or I'm a Georgia coach, or I'm a Georgia player, I am so disappointed in that, and that was shocking to me. It's one thing to lose. It's one thing to have another team out-effort you.
I mean, I think it's a very bold, provocative statement by Tim Tebow, I guess, as an analyst. That's the role that he's supposed to fill. That's the job that he's supposed to do. Kirby Smart was asked during his weekly press conference yesterday, were you satisfied with the effort your team showed against LSU? No mention of Tim Tebow bringing that to a question here. But he was asked to discuss the effort. What was the effort what you wanted it to be? And Kirby Smart did give a response to that notion. Here's what Kirby had to say.
I think conditioning is a major part. I don't know that I would call it effort, lack of effort. I think being conditioned, being able to play 60, 70 snaps, you know, in a row, being able to play sustained drives, being able to play back-to-back plays, you can never be good enough at that. You're always trying to improve. It's something that we worked hard on last week is, you know, how many plays can you play in a row and be at your best? I don't think it's a lack of effort. I think it's more of a lack of conditioning and being able to play a number of snaps in a row and playing a lot of players. We played a lot of players this year, and sometimes you can't do that in games. Sometimes when people go fast, go hurry up, they keep the same guys in, and you've got to be able to sustain and play longer as a player, and that's important for our defensive players.
Yeah, I don't think there's any denying that what Kirby Smart says there has the ring of being true, that conditioning against an opponent like LSU really matters. The inability sometimes to run in the substitutes that you want to run in because of the fact that the other team decides to go fast. We saw Burrow do that a couple of times two Saturdays ago. I mean, you certainly understand that as an issue in the game, and yet I'm also not that surprised to hear Kirby Smart not take the bait on challenging his team's effort, but I would be so bold to suggest that I'm sure that privately the conversation may be very different. Privately, the conversation may center around a little bit of, did you see what this former Florida quarterback said against you about the LSU game? Are you going to allow him to be right about that? Are you going to allow him to make those kinds of statements about you, essentially questioning your manhood here? I would imagine that privately the conversation, like a lot of these things tend to be, privately the conversation may be very different here, and I'm sure that Georgia will use that as motivation. As we said on the show yesterday, they may not need the extra motivation, but they'll certainly take it. And I think that Tim Tebow's words, no matter how Kirby Smart may have played it off at the press conference on Monday, I imagine they may make their way to a few of the players' ears here this week as the Dogs get ready for the Gators. That's Around the Doghouse here on this Tuesday. It's brought to you by Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa in Towns County, Georgia. And you know, the fall and the cooler temperatures are finally here. And actually, that really is true. It's felt great around here the last couple of days. And you know what that means? It's the perfect time to head to Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa, North Georgia's premier mountain resort. It's just 2 short hours away from Atlanta. You can watch the dogs and the big screen TVs there at Brassy Sports Bar. You can also explore Towns County, Georgia, which is home to Lake Chattoog and Brasstown Ball, the highest point in Georgia. I'm also really excited to announce a very special discount for Dog Nation Daily listeners. You can get 20% off any room booked between now and March 31st. Just use the promo code DOG18. That's DOG spelled the way it's supposed to be. D-A-W-G, DOG18, to receive the Brasstown Valley Dog Nation Special. The discount's available until December 31st, and it's based on availability and blackout rates apply. Also, don't forget this, to make sure you enter our Get Out of the Doghouse giveaway. One lucky winner is going to receive a 4-day, 3-night trip for two to Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa, which includes spa treatment, stable rides, 2 rounds of golf with a cart, and more. Just simply go to getoutofthedoghouse.com to enter. That website, once again, getoutofthedoghouse.com to enter. And, of course, once again, dog spelled the way it's supposed to be, D-A-W-G. So great stuff there with Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. It's great to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. And hope you enjoy Jeff Sintel right now.
Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead. Here's a DogNation.com insight.
All right, let's get ready to say hello to Jeff Sintel here for our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all here on this Tuesday. Coming up in a moment, I'll tell you more about our big event at Marlowe's tomorrow at the Marlowe's in Dunwoody. One of our biggest Dog Nation big game previews of the year will take place tomorrow night in Dunwoody. Really looking forward to that. Before that, though, let me say hello to a Jeff Sintel. And Jeff, I'm sure you're probably not too surprised by this. I have a lot of questions for you, my friend, on what you wrote in connection with Jaden Hazelwood on Saturday. I thought it was one of the most provocative interviews that I've seen you publish at DogNation.com. I thought that Hazelwood was about the most outspoken in terms of any recruit I've seen you interview. I guess overall, what was your take on Hazelwood, who clearly seems to have a clear idea of what he wants to see from Georgia here moving forward?
Well, first of all, I think maybe the biggest thing I'm surprised about, my man, is that you didn't give me that standard, Jeff, I'm going to dispense with the pleasantries and just jump right into this one.
Listen, every now and then there, it calls for sort of an emergency Marlowe's Tavern tell-all where we have to really dive into it. I guess this is one of those where, you know, some conversations are a little more serious than others. Maybe this is an example of that, maybe.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to answer your question without those pleasantries we just exchanged there, I think the thing really, and I think I put it on the Dog Nation forum, you know, sometimes there's so many moving pieces with a recruit and his story that subtleties sometimes get lost, especially even at the length of the stories that some of my stories go. I have to sit there and talk about the big picture. I have to discuss where he's at. I have to discuss how he feels about the Bulldogs. I have to discuss what it means for him going forward and his next moves right now. And I think the young man really doesn't know what he wants to do. I think he had a security blanket of a 19-month stint in Georgia, but then he looked around. I think one point, I guess, sometimes got a little confused about was when I meant the point where he wants to see the ball in the air, that was his quick to the point answer about what he wants to see from the schools which are recruiting him. And that, to me, sounds like it is more important to him than Georgia taking a loss to LSU, Auburn struggling right now, the way Miami struggles against Virginia. He just wants to see the type of stage or the type of platform which will allow him to do what he does in college football.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting point, Jeff, and hopefully we'll keep our cell signal strong here so we can keep this going here. But as a Georgia fan who still wants to see Hazelwood end up as a part of Georgia's 2019 class, in a weird way, I actually came away from this interview feeling a little bit better about Georgia's chances of signing Hazelwood, regardless of what happens with the Georgia offense, for a kind of a simple reason here. when you read his words to you at DogNation.com on Saturday, what you don't really hear is a very strong case from him about any one other school. There's clearly some stuff that he wishes was different about Georgia, which is his prerogative to feel that way, but there was no real strong case to be made for Miami. Oklahoma, the place that he took an official visit to back in April, I'll continue to believe that for the most part, the kids that travel west of the Mississippi to go play college football end up not being happy once they get there. So I don't really take Oklahoma all that seriously. Auburn is a total disaster as of right now. Gus Malzahn's future's very much up in the air. And, you know, he didn't really mention other schools by name, you know, for the most part there. So in a weird way, I came away feeling a little bit better about Georgia's chances on Hazelwood simply because, you know, while he's to a certain degree seemingly dissatisfied with Georgia, he doesn't seem all that satisfied with anybody else right now.
Well, I think a part of that, and I'm not trying to make you feel a little less better about things there, Brandon, but part of that is just the nature of a five-minute conversation after a game where I think 2 minutes of that was were his thoughts on Georgia, because I knew that had to be a plot point of my article about where he's at. He decommitted on October the 3rd, and it was really interesting. You know, I gave him a lot of space. I let him kind of decommit but breathe a little bit. Then I came back and talked to him. And I think to me, his thoughts on Georgia are basically what he wants to see for him to start feeling like Georgia was home and kind of get back to that good gracious feeling that he has for Georgia. You know, there's some points there for like Miami, for instance. He's documented to me that, you know, everything seems like 30 or 40 minutes away in Miami. He doesn't like the fact that if Miami wins a big game, they'd have to take a bus ride back to campus of about 40 minutes. That doesn't feel right to him, although he does like the way they keep touting him as a A.J. Green-type talent. They would put him in the same places to succeed that A.J. Green got in Mark Richt's offense at Georgia on his way to NFL superstardom. It's funny, I don't hear a lot of things about Auburn through that conversation. He wasn't really matter-of-factly saying he was going to give them another official. He talked about Southern Cal as a new team that has kind of emerged for him. That might be that West Coast trip that a lot of recruits adore and want to get as one of their five of their official visits. He also mentioned Florida State as well. There you have another school that's struggling at the same time. If I had to think about dark horses, I would think I wouldn't even put Oklahoma as a dark horse. I think Oklahoma probably should be seen as one of those teams everybody's talking about as a great fit for Hazelwood, along with Miami and along with what's left of how he feels about Georgia, simply because they do put the ball in the air. They do have a lot of receivers and the ability to do so. He spoke about spread offense versus pro-style offense. I think maybe the biggest thing that maybe Georgia still needs to do going forward is they need to define their pitch to him. I remember a conversation where Georgia just basically says they want me to be their ex-receiver and make a lot of plays. And he doesn't have a lot of – there's definitely not a lot of meat on that bone, so to speak, in terms of what he feels and what's been, you know, laid out to him about what his life would be like as a Bulldog. I want to get a couple points out there for everybody. He does not mind blocking. He does not mind being a physical receiver. I included some very interesting clips of him getting double press man coverage at the line for a high school game to show, A, how he doesn't mind physical activity, and B, how he can even beat press man coverage at the line in a high school ball game.
And I want to talk to you about a lot of that kind of stuff, and Pace Academy is a really good team to do that against, because obviously that's a program that prides itself on physical football, so that's a pretty good measuring stick for where a high school player is. We'll do some of that coming up in a moment. Let me also remind folks, this is our Marlowe's Tavern Tell All with a Jeff Sintel here on a Dog Nation Daily. And speaking of Marlowe's, we have a huge event coming to a Marlowe's tomorrow night. It's a part of a great week of coverage of the world's largest outdoor cocktail party for us, and it kind of gets going in a big way tomorrow night from 6 to 8 p.m. with our Dog Nation Marlowe's big game preview at the Marlowe's in Dunwoody, which is 1317 Dunwoody Village Parkway. Jeff Sintel's going to be there. I'm going to be there. It's from 6 to 8 p.m. We're also very happy to welcome in the great former Georgia quarterback David Green, who's going to be hanging out with you, signing autographs, posing for pictures, answering your questions, our off-air Q&A, which we do every single time we're at Marlowe's. David Green will be a part of that tomorrow. It's just going to be a great time. Also, David, you know, we talk a lot about tailgate apparel. David's actually bringing some tailgate apparel stuff with him to Marlowe's tomorrow night in Dunwoody. So it's going to be a really cool event. I want you to be there if you can be, because if you want to get ready for the cocktail party with a lot of Gator haters, there's going to be a bunch of Gator haters in the room tomorrow night. And Marlowe's in Dunwoody, 1317 Dunwoody Village Parkway, from 6 to 8 p.m. for our Dog Nation big game preview. All right, Jeff, let me follow up here on something you just said a moment ago, that you think that Georgia needs to, quote, and I love this phrase from you, define the pitch a little bit better from Jaden to Jaden Hazelwood. I would agree with you on that. That's one of the things that I guess I might be critical of Georgia on, based on the way that Hazelwood's described his recruitment, going back to not this interview, but the interview that you had done with Hazelwood before that, which was, I guess, what, the same day that he ended up decommitting from Georgia, where he didn't seem to be all that clear necessarily on how Georgia would use him. There is a part of me then that wonders, is that Cortez Hankton, a relatively inexperienced coach, having some difficulty defining that pitch? It's one of the reasons why I wondered if, even though he's not a wide receivers coach, if Del McGee here, a more experienced recruiter who was also influential in Justin Fields' recruitment, if he should be more involved with this with Hazelwood. Is this an issue with Hankton being inexperienced here? How would you explain the reasons why Hazelwood may be still a little cloudy about how Georgia plans on using him?
Yeah, I think cloudy is a good word there, Brad. And to me, it's a little hazy, and I'm trying to find the gray area, maybe, as a guy that has to write about these things, how it would happen. And maybe it happens in the transition between wide receivers coach James Cooley and also Cortez Hankton. But you got to remember, he was committed to Georgia for 19 months. I think that's maybe the most puzzling thing about a lot of our readership and a lot of our audience sees, is like, okay, he was committed to Georgia when Jacob Eason was still on campus, before Jake Fromm emerged, before Justin Fields emerged. He saw Georgia continue to sign all these five-star backs and five-star offensive linemen. He understands what Georgia football is all about, and he does. He doesn't want to see a scheme where he gets bracketed a lot, or he would ever see guys over the top, not quite to the extent that the chess match that Pace Academy played with him last Friday night. But, I mean, he's a guy, to me, that it just seems, you know, he understands it. And I know sometimes his answers are the answers he wants to give at this time. But the other thing for Hazelwood is, like, he's not a guy that needs to hear, like, the pitch from Georgia doesn't need to hear, we're going to make you the next X, Y, and Z. We're going to make you our first-round receiver. He doesn't really want to hear that. He wants them to hear, he kind of wants to hear, this is what you would be for us. These are the areas you're going to have to get better immediately in practice for you to get reps, for you to get first-team reps in practice, and then be able to take that out on the field. He wants to hear he's an unpolished product. He wants to hear where his edges need to be smoothed out, and he needs to know where he's going to, you know, kind of use the Southern man's English to pull his britches up, roll his sleeves up, and figure out how the way he can start and get good time. He doesn't need a diva script. He doesn't need to hear that you're going to get a nine route every game. He doesn't want to hear any of that. He wants to know how much he's going to need to work to play, because if he hears anything else, he knows that recruiter is simply being dishonest with him.
Fair enough. One of the things that probably got maybe the most attention coming off the interview was Hazelwood's assertion that something happened that led to his decommitment. Now, Jeff, a lot of our audience is going to assume that something may be connected in some way to Justin Fields because of the Hazelwood-Fields relationship, going back to their 7-on-7 team, because of the fact that in multiple interviews with Dog Nation, Hazelwood has referenced Fields as one of the reasons why he was committed to Georgia. I can think of at least two examples in the past where that came up, and therefore the decommitment, at least in some people's mind, they're going to assume this is related in some way to Fields not playing enough. Can you speak to that, either the rumors that Georgia fans are going to try to conjure up over this, or your own thinking about a Hazelwood's process here in terms of what that something might be and the common belief that it may be Fields-related?
Well, I guess I would say this. I would answer that question, and I'm not trying to hem and haw or whatever, but I'd say I've been around the block long enough and heard enough things to to have an idea of maybe option A, option B, or option C about what it might be. But also, I'll also lean on my experience to not throw that sort of speculation out there. I just think it could be something very trivial, Brandon. Sometimes in these cases, a recruiter forgets the mother's name or the little brother's name, and you'd be surprised how much something like that can open up a new thought tree for a recruit. Definitely not saying this is it, but there are a million things it could be.
Sure.
Aside from something simply like, you know, you remember those letters with Aubrey Solomon's mother and everything else like that, where
sure.
Aubrey Solomon, it was saying, can't wait to have you or whatever, and they were already there. I just think that sort of thing could be a million reasons why in a young man's mind. I don't want to go too far out there kind of speculating what that might be for Hazelwood specifically.
Totally fair. Would you be willing, though, to talk about the relationship between Hazelwood and Fields? He did mention Fields to you in the interview. Apart from any kind of, you know, guessing on the part of the fan base here, he did mention Fields to you. What do you make of the Hazelwood-Fields relationship right now and the impact that will have on Hazelwood's recruitment?
Well, I think it's very interesting. I know a lot of people can take it any way they want to, those comments, but I think what Jaden Hazelwood said is a pretty accurate reflection of what at least a large chunk of the fan base would like to see from Georgia. They'd like to see what Fields can do. They'd like to see Georgia take more shots. I don't think anybody would be clamoring for the quarterback merry-go-round or just an audition for the talented backup. If a lot of those big shots from previous years, you know, the play-action pass to Terry Godwin, there's just not been a adequate replacement or an adequate 2018 model for the production that Javon Wims provided the passing game of a year ago. It was those back shoulder throws. It was those throws where Javon Wims was just bigger than the man on him. I mean, it's kind of funny when everybody wants to point to last year's season, though. Javon Wims really hit stride during the back end of Georgia's season. He didn't have the extremely explosive first half of the season before things really took off for him over the last five or six games that Georgia played, especially in the touchdowns and the big play criteria. So I think, you know, obviously those two guys are great. They get along well together. They've spoken for years about how Justin would be able to get him the ball because I've seen Justin fit balls in the windows on 7-on-7s when it's rainy and just make highlight play after highlight play using the services of Hazelwood. Very special talent. I know we echo this a lot where he really does have all the tools, check off all the boxes that someone would want in a receiver that might be spending 3 years on a campus on their way to Sundays. He's simply that good. You know, Jaden Hazelwood, not saying, Brandon, that this will eventually turn out like it will like it did last year. But he, to me, now definitely seems like Tyson Campbell of this class. It's the need, it's the emergence,
yeah.
It's the importance, the ability to play right away, but also that five-star status. And I thought one other thing that was very interesting that's kind of go make folks go crazy in the month of December is he's going to sign during the early period. And he's not going to let his decision out with a reveal until the All-American game on January the 5th, and then he will bounce from there to his new school. So that's a very interesting change up of the timeline for Jaden Hazelwood as well.
Yeah, that is a very interesting update on that. I promise I want to talk about something else besides Hazelwood, so we'll finish our conversation with that in a moment. Let me squeeze in one more on Jaden before we move on, though, and you kind of addressed this earlier. And I think Hazelwood's role in a physical offense continues to also be kind of a topic of discussion. That came up with you and Hazelwood from the piece on Saturday. You referenced it a moment ago. I've even had people within the football community who've I've heard question if Hazelwood can do the things that not just a Georgia offense would require, but an SEC style offense. Because ultimately, the Georgia offense is not that different than the other dominant SEC offenses, like the one at Alabama, for instance, where receivers are going to have to get off press man coverage. They are going to have to block from time to time. But that's also the same kind of stuff that will be required from Hazelwood when he moves on the NFL, which I'm sure is a goal for him. And when I see the film of Hazelwood, although I'm clearly not a scout here, I don't see him shying away from contact during games. It sounds like in the game against Pace Academy, you saw some more evidence of that. I don't want to put, you know, thoughts in your head. I don't want to lead you in a direction. I mean, what do you make of Hazelwood right now as a high school senior in terms of his ability to be a part of a physical brand of football? Is this something that you think he's capable of doing?
Yeah, this dude, number one, his heart does not pump Kool-Aid, and he does not play powder puff football out there. I've got frames of him in 7-on-7s. And listen, I just want the audience to really just get a sense of Jaden Hazelwood, the player. He's been rated as the nation's number one receiver and a five-star recruit since basically January, February of 2017. So that means every 7-on-7 thing he's ever done, every opening, every rivals camp, every anything, that guy comes up to him trying to guard him, and he's trying to figure out, let me get myself a viral clip on Twitter. Let me get some viral film, and then my film and my stock and my offers will go up. And a lot of times they try to jam him. They try to get up in his face, and Jaden has nothing to do with that. He denies it. He gets right up in the guy's face, and he gives them a physical rep back when someone times tries to jam him at the line. He is a guy that, like I said earlier, he checks every box imaginable, and he is a guy that is a ready, willing, and able blocker just by virtue of what you saw against Pace Academy. But he doesn't want to do it every play because he knows he can't make the biggest imprint on a team and the biggest impact on the bottom line of a football game if all he's doing is shot blocking all the time and everything else. This is a guy who can do all these things, but the way he puts points on the scoreboard and enhances his stock as a football player for his career is to also go catch those vertical routes as well that he does so very well.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. All right, I promise you we would talk about something else. Let's talk about this. And this is a theory, Jeff, and I want you to tell me if you think I'm correct or incorrect. I love Georgia, Florida, and Jacksonville. I love being at the King and Prince this weekend in St. Simon's. It's just one of the great weekends that you could have for an entire year to be at the beach enjoying some college football in October. That's a pretty good deal for anybody involved here. But I believe that if Kirby Smart got his way, and there's some comments that he's made over the last couple of years that certainly insinuate this, that he would change this tradition and make this a home-and-home deal, because I don't believe that Kirby Smart likes missing five opportunities to host recruits over the course of a 10-year period. Do you think my assumption here is right, that if Kirby was truly all-powerful here, he would erase the Jacksonville tradition and move this thing onto a campus for recruiting purposes? Am I right about that?
I don't know about that, because, I mean, obviously the program would love to do whatever it can to enhance its recruiting, but you got to remember that there's also a very good recruiting territory for Georgia in Jacksonville and also that northern Florida area, and it might be easier for guys like Kyrie Elam and guys like Tyreek Stevenson to get up to see Georgia, Florida as a fan, not as a hosted recruit, than it would be to get all the way up to Athens, especially when those young men play ball games on Friday nights and the kickoffs are not 7 p.m. I think the main thing, and everybody wants to see change in this rivalry, especially after what Spurrier and Miner did to the rivalry. You got to remember, that game was designed as kind of like South Florida's, South Georgia's, North Florida's home game for a lot of folks in Waycross and Thomasville and Valdosta. And it was a great little early or bonus bowl game for a lot of Bulldog fans in November when, you know, before January and late December always arrived. And it was a good trip to get out away from Atlanta when Atlanta was getting really chilly. I just hope, and this is my personal thought here, that any sort of evolution of the Georgia-Florida location would involve, would still involve Jacksonville in that, so where at least every Georgia and Florida player on scholarship, even the ones that are three and outs, like some of the most talented NFL guys from both sides, get a chance to go Gainesville once, Athens once, and then Jacksonville once. Is it an every three or one out of every three, or does Mercedes-Benz Superdome and Atlanta try to get in there as well? I mean, that's a lot of hands and a lot of places and a lot of fan bases to placate. Then I'm sure the Florida faithful will feel, oh, my gosh, this is only an hour away from Athens. How is this a neutral site? And that will be what Georgia fans have dealt with over the last 20, 25 years when Florida has held the upper hand in that rivalry. I just think it makes it special about college football in the end. I think traditions matter.
I think Oklahoma and Texas still like the way their game is set up as well. And I know a lot of folks, and here's a minor prediction, if the series over the next 10 years is 6-4 Georgia, 7-3 Georgia, or even 5-5, I think a lot of the chatter about that might calm down.
I think it's an interesting point, Jeff. We appreciate you being here today for our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. And, Jeff, I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow night starting at 6 p.m. for our Marlowe's big game preview right there at the Marlowe's in Dunwoody. Not just you and me, but also the former Georgia quarterback, David Green. What a great time to get ready for our trip to Jacksonville and St. Simon's here this weekend and to celebrate with the folks at Marlowe's tomorrow night. It is going to be a lot of fun. Jeff, I can't wait to see you there.
Hey, man, we're going to have to introduce Greeny to those shrimp and crab nachos, my man. I'll see you there.
That is exactly right. Can't wait for that, Jeff. Thanks so much.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, really good stuff from Jeff. I'm glad to hear his thoughts on the Georgia-Florida rivalry because the truth is, and I think it's important to explain this, my own personal thoughts separate from what I believe Kirby Smart might want. And I do think that Kirby Smart would prefer this to be a home-and-home deal. I could be guilty of reading too much into what he said in the past, you know, trying to read between the lines too much. But I do believe that you can read between the lines on some of this kind of stuff. I, for one, hope it doesn't change. I thought the way that Jeff said that was pretty appropriate, that it is one of the special traditions in college football. And Georgia's kind of lucky here. You know, as much as I, always talk about how, you know, Florida should be Georgia's biggest rival, and I've made my case for why I think that should be true. Not everybody agrees, but I've made the case the best I can for why I think it should be that way. Georgia overall is kind of lucky in the fact that it actually has three named rivals. Now, think about this for a moment. You know, a rivalry is a pretty big deal if it's got a name. Well, Georgia's got three rivalries that have names. It's got the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. It's got clean old-fashioned hate with Georgia Tech. And it's got the Deep South's oldest rivalry with Florida. I should say with Auburn. So, you know, Georgia's in pretty good shape from a rivalry standpoint that three rivalries have enough historical significance to have names. There have been books written about all those rivalries from time to time over that. But there are certain things that are special enough that I think they ought to be protected. And, you know, we'll hear Dan Mullen later in the week talking about what he views as the Georgia-Florida rivalry. Almost every coach talks about the idea of driving over that bridge, you know, landing right there in this area around the stadium. And when you get in there, it's half the red, half the blue. And it is kind of a cool environment. It does feel like one of the biggest regular season games you could play. You know, credit to the city of Jacksonville for making it feel that way. They've done a good job of this kind of thing in the past. And as Jeff also alluded to, if it ever does change, and any kind of change in this rivalry in terms of where the game's played is many years in the future, you know, if it ever does change, I hope that change doesn't take place until after Georgia has corrected the record here. That is, unfortunately, you know, as he said, the Steve Spurrier, the Urban Meyer stuff, that kind of put a blight on the Georgia program in terms of the number of losses that Georgia started to rack up there in Jacksonville. I'll be the first to tell you I want to see that corrected here, and so we'll see Georgia hopefully get a chance to do that. But good stuff from Jeff there on the Georgia-Florida rivalry. Before we move on to more on the Dogs in the football field, let me also celebrate some of the great things that Georgia's doing in the classroom as well, and some of the ways in which people like you watching or listening right now have contributed to a great environment around the University of Georgia. Because since 1785, UGA has sought to bring an exceptional but also affordable college education to those seeking higher learning. Of course, UGA has ranked the top 20 as the best value university every year that Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine has published the list since 1998. This year, UGA is ranked number 12 amongst all public universities in the country. But even with the Hope Scholarship and the Zell Miller Scholarship, some students still struggle to cover the full cost of attendance. That's why UGA donors have established thousands of scholarships that are paving the way for students to succeed. Now, some of these offerings, like the Georgia Commitment Scholarship Program, have created opportunities for students who otherwise wouldn't have the chance. We know what it means to be a Bulldog, and we don't want anything to hold back our students from those goals. UGA donors are proud to support future Bulldogs from around the state and the country. Now, for more information on how you can be involved to help contribute to this great cause, I want you to check out this website. It's give.uga.edu. That's give.uga.edu. You can pave the way for the next generation of future Bulldogs. All right, a couple stories here for our SEC Through. I'm assuming this is real. I don't believe this is a joke. Democratic operative James Carville, writing the Baton Rouge Advocate, essentially accusing the SEC of colluding with Alabama to keep the Crimson Tide on the top of the SEC world here on the heels of the Devin White suspension for targeting. He'll miss the first half of the game against Alabama. I agree with Carville that the call against Devin White is a bad call. I don't believe this is an example of colluding with Alabama. Carville goes on the Vine Pop show yesterday and said that he would trust the Saudi government before he would trust the SEC office. I don't know if this is like a some sort of like joke or what, but you know, that's the road that he went down there. I think it's a terrible call. I think there's some people at the highest, you know, ranking world of football, both in the NFL and college, that are so afraid of trial lawyers they've essentially watered down the sport. That's what's really going on here. I don't believe there's any kind of collusion with Alabama, but it is a very funny, you know, I don't know if it's like a parody or what, but it's certainly a self-parody, if nothing else, from James Carville talking about collusion there on that. Jalen Hurts also injures his ankle in the Tennessee game. He goes through a minor surgical procedure. I don't quite know how serious it ended up being for him, but I am a believer that as much as Tua Tagovailoa has dominated this season, there's some sneaking suspicion for me that before it's all said and done, Alabama's attempt at a national championship is going to involve Jalen Hurts somehow. I don't know if it's on the play as an extra player or replacing Tua because of a brief injury at quarterback. Something tells me that we have not heard the last of Jalen Hurts in a big moment this season from Alabama. And so him being healthy, him being able to handle that, I think becomes an important part of whatever goes on there. I think we'll be talking about Hurts in a big way before the season's done, assuming an injury doesn't end his season. That's one of the reasons why, you know, paying attention to his health for Alabama is important, much like Tua Tagovailoa, who's also dealing with a knee injury here as well. And one thing we did not mention yesterday, but we need to mention now, you know, Auburn, I don't want to say saved its season because it's still not having a very good season, but it certainly kept its season from coming to a complete, you know, screeching halt disaster by beating Ole Miss on Saturday. And, you know, you hear me say this a lot, that teams don't give up their seasons, you know, before the month of October is done without a fight. And Auburn did show some fight against Ole Miss on Saturday, and maybe Gus Malzahn survives now, at least for a few more weeks, but the true earnest hot seat talk here. I still think that where this team goes the rest of the way is going to be interesting. And I guess in a roundabout way, I still think after the Kentucky game, when Auburn comes to Athens, I think that is still a tough game for Georgia. Now, that's a game that I would assume Georgia's a pretty big favorite in, and I would pick Georgia to win. But let's not be so quick to assume that Auburn's going to be a total disaster by the time it gets to Athens on November 10th, maybe showing a little life against Ole Miss, an example to prove that. We'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, you know, we've been talking a lot about what's going to happen for us this weekend as we head towards the cocktail party. And for us, before we get to Jacksonville, like so many of you, that's going to involve a stopover for us in beautiful St. Simons Island. I cannot wait to be at the King and Prince Resort on Friday. We're going to do Dog Nation Daily from the King and Prince Resort on Friday morning, and then Friday afternoon at 4 p.m., for our special Gator Hater preview on day one of our Gator Hater countdown this Friday, 4 p.m. Jeff Sintel going to be there at the King and Prince Resort in St. Simons Island, Georgia. We're going to be having a great, great time there, celebrating the cocktail party in style with so many of you. And the great news is, if you're still looking for a place to spend the cocktail party, if you're looking for some cool Georgia fans to hang out with and have a good time, there's actually still a little bit of availability left for you at the King and Prince Resort. And there's a special deal right now for Dog Nation Daily listeners and viewers. Let me tell you, though, how to do this. You got to call. You can only get this special savings by calling. So let me give you the number to dial. It's 800-342-0212. If you're watching, you can see it on the screen there. Call the King and Prince at 800-342-0212. And then when you get the operator on the phone, you have to ask for the special dog deal pricing. So ask for the dog deal pricing at King and Prince Resort, and you can hang out with us there this weekend in St. Simons. Dog Nation Daily that morning at 10 a.m., that afternoon at 4 p.m. on Friday for our Gator Hater preview with myself and Jeff Sintel and a whole bunch of dog fans getting ready for the Florida game on Saturday. That is going to be a lot of fun. So we'll see you at the King and Prince Resort in St. Simons Island coming up this weekend for the cocktail party. That's going to be awesome. All right, back to the story at hand for Georgia, which is Florida on Saturday. And for a lot of Georgia fans, the curiosity continues to mount about how much of the quarterbacks we're going to see. How much of this game will belong to Jake Fromm? How much of this game will belong to a Georgia's backup, Justin Fields? Obviously, you know the backstory here. There are some Georgia fans calling to see more of Fields on the heels of a mostly ineffective offensive performance for Georgia against LSU. Kirby Smart, as you might imagine, was not very forthcoming when he spoke to the reporters yesterday about what we'll see from Fields. He is keeping his cards very close to the vest here.
I think it's the same message we've had all along. We want to play the guy that gives us the best opportunity to be successful. And that comes from a lot of reps in practice, a lot of work in practice. They both got a tremendous amount of work last week, and we'll continue to make that decision based on what gives us the best opportunity to be successful.
So, listen, I don't know that Kirby Smart owes us more than that. I mean, obviously, there's a curiosity here to hear more about Fromm and Fields. And, I mean, I'd give anything to be a fly on the wall both this week of practice, last week in practice, to see the competition between these two quarterbacks, because I do believe that Georgia's quarterback position is no different than any other. Even if Kirby Smart occasionally talks about the position slightly different than he talks about the other positions, I still believe that this, like all positions, is a position where playing time is dictated by a competition. I would imagine that Justin Fields may have buckled that chin strap a little tighter over the last few days. This week as well, to go out there and show that he's ready for more of the offense, not just being on the field more, but also with the football in his hand, able to throw more. That's what a lot of Georgia fans have called for, and I understand why that call has been made. My opinion on this is not going to be changed. I still think that Georgia is a program that benefits from having both Fromm and Fields, and I wouldn't mind seeing a role for both these guys in the game against the Gators on Saturday. So we'll see how that plays out. I mean, obviously, what a lot of you have said to me is, you know, when you see Trevor Lawrence, the freshman quarterback, what he's doing for Clemson, it makes you yearn more to see more from Justin Fields. And I can understand where that's coming from here, that Lawrence is handling the load for a playoff contender there for the Tigers. Justin Fields, as a prospect, was sort of mentioned side by side with Lawrence a lot in the recruiting process. I can understand why that makes some of you want to see more from Justin Fields. I continue to believe, though, that there's and I wrote about this on Friday at DogNation.com, that there's a chance that Jake Fromm bounces back and has a much better performance against Florida. We will see how that goes. Let me also respond to this, and I know that when we talk a lot about Jaden Hazelwood, or when a story like the one that Jeff wrote on Saturday with the five-star wide receiver gets a lot of attention, there's almost always some immediate pushback from people who say, I'm tired of hearing about this. I'm done with him. Read what Terrence Edwards, the great former receiver, said about Hazelwood at DogNation.com. That's the reason why you still want Hazelwood. We'll see you tomorrow here on Dog Nation Daily.